Oh, I listened to Dad Vibes.
Oh, finally.
Yeah.
What'd you think?
I wanted to like it. I did not care for it. Yeah, that was a flaccid biscuit.
Oh, I'm not seeing how.
It's the cover band.
No, I know that, dude. Fucker, ass, fuck. Oh, god damn it.
Do Ashley can have a religious experience, and it can be even more important than reading the Bible 6 times or becoming a pope.
Out of the mist and into the fog, it's Chuddle the Pod.
Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of Chuddle the Pod, the podcast that doesn't normally do the intro like this. It's where three best friends look at the curious world around us. And also the podcast that when I told my wife the name, she went, ugh. So we got that going
likewise.
For us too, right?
Likewise.
Right? That was fun. Those beautiful voices you hear there are my lovely co-hosts, Sam and Ross. We'll jump over to Sam first. How you doing today?
What up, what up, what up? I'm doing well today. Yeah, fantastic. Got to go to the skate park today. We got a little break in the weather. It's very cool here. And I walked the dogs in the morning and thought, I'm going to the skate park.
Nice. Did you get to see your buddy there?
No.
Okay.
Did you hand out fruit and packages to children?
It's pretty empty. Nobody's there in the morning, which is what I like about it. So
nice.
Had the whole place to myself. Skated literally every bit of it. No, but there's a couple other old dudes in pads.
Nice.
So yeah, had a good day.
Great. Awesome. Do you have any social media you want people to follow you at? Do you have anything to promote? Got any shows coming up?
Yeah, you can check out, if you haven't listened to the other episodes of the podcast you're listening to now, please check them out. You can do it wherever you're listening to this one. And if you were interested in following me, I'm on Instagram and Twitter, ChuddleTheSam at both. So follow me. Maybe I'll follow you back. Actually, I'll definitely follow you.
I'll definitely
the only
do
accounts
it.
I haven't followed back yet are porn accounts.
That's a guarantee.
So.
Do you have I mean, porn accounts following you?
Yeah.
I don't know if our official Twitter does, but maybe we'll look into that. I probably followed them first accidentally. I just went
it's
through
more
a list.
On Instagram.
Oh, okay.
Oh, no.
And that other spooky voice you hear there is our one spooky. And only, I don't know, spooky horror expert, Ross. How you doing, buddy?
Oh, hey. I'm doing, you know what? I'm doing well. The spooky season is full at hand. We did a corn maze yesterday,
ooh,
which was amazing. It only took my 2-year-old daughter 7.5 hours to get out of the big maze.
Nice.
That was actually, well, a hell of act, technically. But I mean, like, she got out of the maze. But no, it was fun. We also, I got to see, I'm not doing a review on it, don't worry. Saw the new Halloween Kills.
It'll be like four
super
weeks
bloody.
Since.
Yeah, it'll be like a month beforehand. Yeah, but you'll probably hear it eventually because I got a whole shopping list of fun,
right.
fun stuff for that
good,
one.
Good. We did a little fall festival too over the weekend, but we didn't have time for the corn maze. I wasn't going to let my kid get lost in there.
Right.
Oh.
I didn't do any cool sort of fall bro. Festivals or corn mazes, unfortunately. I walked through Central Park a whole bunch, so that was kind of spooky at times, I guess.
Central Park?
Yeah. I mean, I could see how that...
Newark?
Yeah, I could see how that could be.
But that's great to hear that you guys have been doing so well. As I mentioned before, I am your remaining co-host, Brian, and you can follow me at Chuddle the Brian. I forgot to ask you, Ross, where can people find you? Sorry, I just jumped right into myself. So selfish.
No. Well, it's because I've been so social media absent for so long that it was just kind of a natural conclusion just
okay,
to end
I'll
it
take
there.
It.
But I drag the lake, and I have an Instagram, which is Chuddle the Ross on Instagram. And I'm going to be giving you guys a BT dubs on what I'm going to be reviewing. So you can watch it beforehand and have me listen and do terrible reviews on just no plot lines, no just befuddling the entire thing.
Just a stream of consciousness about yeah.
Just movie verbal diarrhea, basically. Thanks, guys.
That's all the little Chuddle heads will love it.
All the Ross heads.
Ross heads.
Pod damn it, Ross.
Pod damn it, Rossers. I don't know. We'll figure it out. They'll figure it out. Who knows what it is? But as I said before, you can follow me. You can follow Sam. You can follow Ross. All of us at Chuddle the Pod on Twitter and Instagram for all those awesome suggestions you want to give us for all our fun little dumb segments that we do. So thank you for that in advance. I know they're gonna start coming soon. We we're actually like releasing the episodes. People are listening.
The numbers. We're all over the world. We're global at this point.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. we see Australia. So thank you so much to all you guys there. I totally forgot. I didn't talk to you guys about this first, but I'm actually going to have Ross go first with his movies. Talk about his movies a little bit. So we're going to go ahead and get into that. Welcome. Yeah.
But
first, we're going to take a quick little break. All right. Thank you for whatever the heck we just listened to. So our first segment today is from, as we mentioned before, our wonderful Ross. He went and sat down yet again in his dark, dark haunted house that he, I don't know, his home. I don't know why your home is a haunted house.
I don't know where he's
in his dark, evil,
from my dank cave.
Hellhole.
In his dank, dank crawl space. He sat down and watched a movie for us. So, Ross.
Well, hey there, buckaroos. Welcome for another video roundup with your pal, Ross.
Spoilers ahead.
Deep from the recesses, the cesspool of cinema, comes another, god, ridiculous review. I did a really weird thing, and I just randomly spun in a circle and tried picking a movie for this week. Mm-hmm. And I had a ball. I watched VHS 94. I haven't done the review yet. I'm getting way ahead of myself.
Is that how you picked this movie that I watched also? You were just like, and this sure.
Yeah. Well, okay. So in all transparency, I am a sucker for anthology horror movies. Like, that's my favorite subgenre of movies. So when this came out, this was definitely on my list of just, I was just going to watch it for myself.
Sure. Okay.
And then I had so much fun watching this that I thought I would involve you gentlemen as well. Because this was so spoopy and so Halloween-y. It was fantastic, and I had to share it with you guys.
Oh well, thanks for having me.
I see what you did there.
I haven't seen any of the other VHS movies. Yes, please.
Oh, they're such. It's a fantastic series. Why I want to do the review for this one is this is the fourth installment of the VHS series. VHS 1, 2. And Viral, they're good, they're decent movies. I would say if you're going to start, you don't necessarily have to start in order because this is streaming on Shudder right now. So I would say this is a really good way of just kind of involving yourself into the series because the premise behind all the VHS films is you literally have just popped in a random VHS and this is what the entire tape involves. So usually there is a tie-around story, which is like the main narrative of what's going on and why you're watching all the other sub little short films that are in it. And then there are usually a handful of short, horror-filled, gory-as-all-hell short films that are meshed into these found footage movies. This one in particular is all centered around 1994. So it's the fourth installment. I think it's kind of a tongue-in-cheeky kind of way of kind of reintroducing because the reception for VHS Viral kind of, if you've seen the series, it's the weakest of all three of them. It was a little lackluster, especially after the popularity of the first one. And then honestly, they kind of did themselves way better in the second one, I think, with special effects and the directors involved and stuff like that.
That makes sense. One of the things I thought while watching this one, I was like, this clearly has a pretty decent budget, but the premise to me is just so you can make something with no budget and you could probably make it good. So it makes sense to me that the first one, or the second one, was better than the first one, probably because they had a lot more money for the same style of movie.
Exactly, exactly. And what's kind of what plays to the benefit of the special effects artists and I think the directors in this is that it has all of the VHS grain pops and static and all that kind of stuff. So you can kind of get away with a certain level of CGI and budget effects that normally wouldn't work in like a high def movie. But if you're doing it in the auspice of like having it filmed on a VHS camera,
right,
or like a recorder from like the 90s, it looks fantastic and it's super eerie and creepy.
Nice.
I mean, obviously it's kind of, think of like a lo-fi version of the original, like Record or the American version, which would be Quarantine. So like it's that kind of like found footage thing. But what's kind of interesting about this VHS series is that it is an anthology horror series. So there are these little vignettes that are inside of this overlaying story. For VHS 94, it is the main tie around story is a SWAT team coming in and swooping in on a what they believe is a drug dealers. They get in and they find this like doomsday death cult with all of these TVs and things like that, which kind of leads into the beginning stories. The first one is Storm Drain, which is about a 90s reporter doing a live interview with a bunch of people who have seen a rat man in the
rat sewers. Man.
Nice. Is rat it a rat man. A rat man, not a rat king?
It's not a rat king. Man. I was expecting a,
okay.
It was a rat man. And the people have seen it.
Rat
and a bunch
man,
of other
Papa.
Stuff.
Rat man.
It's a rat man. Hail Ratma.
Hail Ratma.
The second one is called The Empty Wake, which centers around a young woman working at a mortuary and is in charge of a overnight wake in the middle of a storm by herself.
Oh, that's fun.
The third, and I think probably the most technical of all of them, is called The Subject. And this is a POV, kind of, I guess the best way to put it would be like a Frankenstein cyborg, just nightmare.
Okay. Yeah, it's like a body horror, mad scientist experimentation.
Okay.
About a guy kind of like adding, like kind of meshing the wills and braids of machinery and man into one kind of huge thing. That entire segment feels just like a video game, realistically.
Oh,
it reminded me of like Hardcore Henry.
Yeah,
it's all POV from the person.
I will say it's a little easier to watch than Hardcore Henry. I got so sick trying to watch that movie that I had to leave. I was seeing it in theaters. I had to leave and like go back to my hotel room and lay down because of how difficult watching that movie was for me. And I didn't have any of those issues with this.
Oh, with that segment? Yeah, no, absolutely. No, Hardcore Henry, it felt at certain points that they had duct taped a video camera to a puppy's head. So it's just going all over the place.
There's all these
weird angles. It makes you super nauseous. So the last little short film is called Terror. And this is about
this was my favorite.
Basically, a white supremacist alt-right group that is trying to use a creature of the night as a bioweapon. Yes, also fucking hilarious. Really, really well done. So that is the kind of general synopsis. So the tie-around story, which is entitled Holy Hell, which is the SWAT team, was done by Jennifer Reeder, who also did the films Knives and Skin. I would probably say this story, which I think is the strong point of VHS 1 and VHS 2 that wasn't for VHS 3, which again isn't for VHS 4, is that the main glue of the story, the Holy Hell is the tie-around story that's supposed to lead everything in. It's the most uninteresting part of the entire film.
And I would have had no idea that that was supposed to be the tie-around story, like, until you said that, because that's what it is in the other movies. I was like, oh, I guess I can see that, but I did not get that, not having seen the other movies.
Oh, absolutely. It's super... the idea is super cool. It's just the... it's too loose. Like in the first film, it's a bunch of guys breaking into a home, and then like that's the tie-around story is equally as creepy as all the little shorter segments. Story, and in this one, it's like, yeah. And in this one with the SWAT team and stuff like that, it's garbled. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like, you're almost waiting just to get to the next point instead of like actually being interested in what's going on.
Yeah. That I was not very, so not being familiar with the format, but knowing it was an anthology during the first part of that, what's this one called?
Holy Hell.
Holy Hell. During the first part of that one, I jumped ahead to see how long it was going to be because I was just, of all of them, like the most messed with VHS copy. Like there's a line running across it almost the whole time. And like you have a really bad like the most player you're playing it on. Yeah.
I got you.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
I was so, I don't know about this.
Which is kind of like, I could see how people, especially this is the first thing that they're watching in this, in these short films. It does get a little, I kind of had the same feeling where I was like, uh-oh, I hope this doesn't wind up being viral. Because viral had just had this terrible turnaround and everything was just shot well, but made to look crappy.
Right.
That's kind of what it looked like. So the second story, Storm Drain, is batshit. Like, all of these are so good.
Funny.
They're fucking ridiculous. I think that's the diamond in this series, is that because they're so short, they are kind of cheesy, they mm-hmm. are really fun to watch, and they're just fucking violent. And that's what you go into these movies. Like, there is no, like, you're not getting this, like, deep cultural narrative of things. Like, right, you're waiting for a rat man to come out of the sewer and fucking
rat man.
People, right?
Hail
Ratma.
Did you already say that it's a news team?
Yeah. So basically the news team gets, like, pressured in by their executives to actually go to the storm drain that this rat man has been found in. And they start kind of like crawling their way into it, and they kind of have a bunch of, they start finding people in the sewers. So
what I love in the beginning, they're just doing like, and here's the like local news story on, some say there's a rat man walking around Westerville or something, you know, and when you shine your light on it, it disappears. And people are like, oh yeah, I've seen it, this, that, and they do like a sketch of what it may look like. And it's just like some awful drawing done in pencil on a
legal
pad. It reminds me of the
leprechaun
drawing.
Yeah,
100%. It was so funny.
It's so good. I also like the beginning of the segment starts off with, is the internet here to stay? We'll find out. Because everything's set in 94. So it's like no fucking, birthing moment of internet and stuff like that. And it's all local news.
Right.
So it all looks like it's like ripped from the same VHS.
Like, I think I'll stick with my telephone for now.
So funny. So they kind of get in there. And when you actually get to see this fucking rat creature, because you're expecting halfway through that it's just a bunch of homeless people. Like, it's not a chud. Like, it doesn't lead you into a chud situation. You just are like, oh, there's like homeless people living underneath the sewer line.
And they're all like black oil type of thing all over them. They look,
oh my God,
scary.
Yeah, the finding new disciples. Yeah, this older man who is kind of like the holder for this like rat creature. He kind of like, have you been chosen? We need to figure this out. And like pours this liquid. It's also the preacher from the church. Like, I realized that was the preacher from the church, like the second viewing. I was like, oh shit. Okay, this is why that guy was so weird out front of the church.
Yeah.
Dumps it on the camera guy. The whole fucking camera guy's face just like fucking melts away. Exactly, but like that gurgly, like,
and you don't really see that one too much. It's like, no, in the sewers,
so it's like hidden lighting and stuff like that. And then she kind of gets baptized in rat vomit, and like you're kind of sitting there, like, oh, okay, but it's not burning her. So I was like, oh, dip, something different,
interesting,
So it jumps to her like getting pulled out of the storm drain. They can't find the camera guy. And then, which is just,
That's so funny. When it jumps to her coming out of the storm drain, it's the news anchor at the desk. He's like, and our poor like journalist out in the field, she got stuck in the sewers, and here's the footage of her coming out. And it's her looking like scared and terrified, covered in this like black oil, shaking, like coming. Uh-huh. It's like, just like, the worst looking like
shit.
Hey, look, we got her.
Well, she also gets her one up on that, because she gets hired. She goes back on the show, and then she kind of is like, she starts talking about the fall festival, stuff like that. And she just starts dropping.
She's
Ratma,
an anchor.
Ratma. And then she turns around and just fucking vomit black on this dude's face. He pulls his whole face off.
Rad.
Fucking so good. His eyes melt on
really
his
good.
Fucking head.
Nice.
And rips his whole face off.
Oh boy.
Honestly, if you're into face ripping, Dude, just like an immediate buy. Like, this is an insta buy.
If you're okay. Okay.
Yeah, it's like, man, I haven't seen someone get vomited on their face and have it ripped off since, like, I don't know, Cronenberg's The Fly. Man, maybe I should watch this. Do it.
Just
do it.
I'm having a craving. This is the way to go. All right.
Certified face ripper. Yeah.
That's great. Skip right to this one and you got it.
You got it, right? So The Empty Wake, I think, has the most dead space in the...
I started falling asleep during it. I had to, like, sit up.
But I think it's... But no, I think it actually adds to the... everyone I've talked to about, they don't like this segment. I like it because it is a very slow burn. I mean, like, the entire atmosphere of this is that this girl is in charge of this... wake for this guy who had died, and they kind of allude to the fact that he had, like, fallen from, like, a high distance, so, like, he's just stitched back together, and they said they couldn't do much about his head, so, like,
it's
that's
a closed
already
casket. They're like,
it's a closed casket. You can't. Wake, she's all by herself, no one shows up to this wake, but she's noticing that, like, the casket's moved a little bit, and then, like, she can hear, like, thudding going on, and it gets progressively more fucked up as the night goes on. So there's a gentleman who shows up. One person comes to this wake, says a prayer in a different language, and then excuses himself out the door. Obviously, you can kind of tell where this is going. Someone comes out of the coffin. And the zombie makeup on this was fucking outstanding. I also do like the small, it's not even Easter egg, but it's like kind of a little nod, is that, like, I would want to see what language he was praying in and what he was saying, because that dude definitely locked her in there. Because there's a scene where she tries bolting out of the funeral home and it's chained up.
Pick that up.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, dip, he knew about it. And her
but
best friend basically said...
But I was also really confused
said,
by the end, so I'm... And keep going.
So there's a lot of weird things going in play, and all of it's on, like, the telephone calls that she keeps on getting, is that there's a storm watch with a hurricane... Or not, sorry, hurricane. I live in Florida, so I think everything's a hurricane. It's not. It's a tornado warning. And she gets a call from her friend that basically says this dude committed suicide on top of a fucking church and, like, was speaking gibberish and fucking nuked himself. So there's, like, a whole different thing. Because she's all by herself. And they set it up where there's, like, three cameras because the family insists that the entire wake is recorded for some reason. And they're paying extra money for it. So that's the reason why there's so many cameras and stuff like that.
Okay.
So she gets locked in. You start hearing, like, the
is
warnings
that what it
of
was?
Like, the family pays extra.
I thought he records them in case the family wants to buy them.
No. The family,
we do
requested...
this all the time and then, like, upsell them. I was like, what?
Like, those upsell. Videos you can buy after a roller coaster.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're so sorry for your loss, but if you'd like to see your grieving in 4K, we have it here at the gift shop for $29.95 plus shipping and handling.
It's souvenir photos.
I don't know
photos.
How I got that.
We'll also put your loved one on a souvenir one-of-a-kind koozie along with your DVD.
Would you like a picture of yourself crying on a koozie?
What
we
could
get
mug.
Coasters of your whole family and, like,
just
wailing.
Just crying on just a it's on a commemorative plate. No, he brings it up for, like, 30 seconds in, like, while he's setting up the cameras and stuff. So, like, this one's a little, again, I can understand why people don't, or this isn't their favorite. But the, when this motherfucker wakes up and he starts, like, running around, he's got half of his fucking head cleaved off. One of his arms or hands drops off.
That's really cool.
He's, like, disemboweled and a bunch of other stuff. I love the fact that this dude's head's, because his whole body's mangled, right? So he gets up and he's, like, kind of, like, sloshing around. She realizes really quickly that this dude cannot see her. She can only, this thing can only hear her.
Because its head's so messed up.
So she's, like, screams on something, it kind of runs toward her, and then she finds the other part of the fucking head. And it opens its eyeball and then realizes, where's she at? Boom,
sure. Yeah.
Camera rolls around, zombie kind of comes, and now simultaneously while this is happening, a tornado hits the funeral home. So the entire,
of course.
That's when the windows break out, and then that's kind of the, a tornado hit, so that's why this fucking body's out of its casket and a bunch of other stuff. So the camera pans back, and this is kind of like the weird nod, because you don't know if she's dead. And now, because she got attacked by this fucking zombie, she's also a zombie and lurching out because she looks pretty banged up. Or she survived it and got out one of the windows. I'm leaning more towards she's a zombie. But they don't explain it. And that's with a lot of this VHS stuff, is that, like, there's a whole lot of, like,
I
loose ends.
I thought it ended
and the camera just
with
cuts.
So I didn't realize there was a tornado thing happening either. Maybe that's when I was dozing off. But I thought she got attacked by him. Everything, you know, the camera falls to the side or whatever. And then we saw her come up and you're kind of like, oh, is she a zombie now? She walks towards the windows and then the windows explode and that's the end of it, which I thought that was how it ended.
No, it's in reverse. The windows blow out.
And then she walks up. And goes out.
Then she walks out, and then she like half crawls out the window. And stuff.
Okay, because I was like, did a giant bomb just go off? What the fuck is going on? Maybe I was just so confused. Like,
just fucking nuke out of nowhere. Uh-huh. That should be the new film series. Just nuke out of nowhere. An entirely normal scene, and then a nuclear bomb.
And then a nuke out of nowhere.
It's we do movies, but we nuke them out of nowhere. Just any scene from a movie, we're really good at special effects.
Just drops, insert, done.
All right, so the third one is the subject, and that's from Timo Giangianto, who is he directed the in VHS2. There is a segment called Safe Haven, which is batshit fucking one of the coolest, weirdest fucking segments from VHS ever. He directed this. He also directed May the Devil Take You, and he's also in the process of remaking Train to Busan right now. This guy is fucking so good.
This guy is so good.
So this is a mad scientist found film, basically. So he's doing like not illegal surgeries. He's abducting people and he's videotaping.
Illegal surgeries.
Not illegal surgeries.
Illegal surgeries. The VHS.
So this is where, if there was a cumulative budget, this is where the budget went for the movie, because there are there are cyborgs, there are explosions, there are SWAT teams, and it's all in POV. So it's like, it starts off as a normal VHS of this dude doing brain surgery on two people. And one wakes up and he fucking anesthetizes this guy by stabbing him in the fucking eyeball.
It starts off with the spider head guy.
Oh yeah, I totally forgot about spider. Dude, there's a guy,
it zooms in on his face.
It zooms on his face and he wakes up and he's like, and it pans out and he's on like a fucking, he kind of reminds me of from Toy Story.
Sid's
baby
little
head with the
I know what you're talking about.
It's that, but think of like a real head on a spider body, and then he starts jiggling around, and then he just bursts into flames for no reason. I was like, Ophelia. So you see this like little short thing of brain surgery, and then the entire rest of this segment is the POV shot of one of his creations, which is a missing girl. Now turned into God knows what.
Yeah, you just know it's like a flesh metal bionic thing.
Yeah, like a killbot almost. So you don't really see what she turns into until almost at the end of the segment, where she sees herself in the mirror for the first time. And that is nasty. This is so
pretty cool.
So good. Like if you're into like biomech, if you're into like Frankenstein stuff, this is such a cool, because he's an insane scientist, I guess is the pretense. He was doing prosthesis, and like he was like revolutionary in that. So he makes these like robot bio people, basically. Uh-huh. So and as the thing kind of progresses and you kind of get through his laboratory, you see all these just insanely disgusting creations, and just so the gore nuts on this was just so fucking
once
nuts.
They like start being revealed, you get a lot of it at once and it's like, whoa.
Totally right. So the cops show in all great ones, the cops show up and the cops have a different VHS because they're recording the entire thing.
You start getting all alternate angles.
Right.
Totally different alternative angles and stuff like that. So, of course, the police just show up and they just decide to murder him on the site. Just kill the fucking doctor. Yeah. He booby trapped the entire fucking lab. So it goes to like DEFCON 1. There's red lights. A massive explosion happens. And then it triggers the fucking killbot cyborg guy. This guy has huge blades for hands and his head is huge, and this guy slices, dices, minces and winces. This guy just slaughters like dozens of people. Oh man, this was the most, this segment in and of itself was the most fun to watch. Like, this wasn't scary. I mean, it's the gross out factor is a 10, but it's not it's not visually scary. Like, there's not really, like, jump scare stuff like that. This is more like, oh, you gotta be fucking kidding me. And then, like, 2 minutes later, like, you gotta be fucking kidding me. And then, like, 4 minutes later, like, oh, fuck off. Like, nuh-uh. No right. fucking way. And then by the end of it, you're just like, oh, okay, well, that actually makes sense, because this is just the level of fucking ridiculous that we're getting into. Beautifully shot. It's super cool seeing a POV like that actually works. There's so many movies and so many short films that have tried doing something like this, and it just doesn't, it like you were talking about, Sam, like, it's like you either get incredibly disoriented, you have no idea what the fuck you're looking at, but with this it worked. It was seamless. It was absolutely really, really cool. Yeah, cannot, like, this is probably the
highlight. I was just gonna say, of the found footage, this was the one that did seem like it was the best camera, like the best film quality, and like made degraded a little bit.
Mm, I gotcha.
Yeah.
Compared exactly. to any of the and other like, ones.
This is
for 1994, especially.
For 94, it's a little advanced. It does take you out of the, it takes you out of the vibe of the 94 VHS. I think I agree, because it is so well shot. The only pass I'm going to give this is that because it's in a fucking, like, space age robot. That's why I'm like, okay, this can look a little better, because this is like the camera eye shot of like a cyborg.
That makes sense.
No other free passes from this guy. Then to tie up the entire film, shy of the tie around story, the last one is Terror. And this fucking segment, guys, is the most, oh, it's so ridiculous. It's so fucking just funny. It's just,
and
like,
I thought, and it's what we were just saying for the subject, this one I thought felt the most, like, for the quality, the look of it, seemed the most like it was out of 94 of any of them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. So it's so it this authentic. Is like, it's like a neo, and they don't, like, very authentic, like how everyone's dressed, how everyone's kind of how they're conducting themselves, how everything's shot, the even the buildings that they chose and stuff like that. There's really no modernization to where you're the filming locations.
So they filmed in Cleveland.
Hey. This part's set in Detroit, so.
Oh,
that's also we're really sorry to everyone in Cleveland who may or may not be listening to this for Brian's comments. Thank you.
Brian stands by those comments. Okay, so
what's funny though is that they don't necessarily, like, classify it by name, right? So, like, there's no, like, they're not wearing swastikas, they're not doing that, but you can definitely tell this is like an alt-right, like, this is a neo-Nazis before they were called alt-right, like, just very, like, we need to, like, a cleansing of Detroit,
like a right-wing militia,
right?
Yeah, that kind of stuff, like, want, like, against the government and, like, Christian. Yeah, exactly, like that kind of huge, right? And it looks like, which is also kind of just fucking strange, this entire VHS segment is supposed to be, it starts off being like a join our cause type thing, because, like, they have shots of these guys marching up and down the woods and, like, doing push-ups and stuff like that, and, like, nice. They're always, like, getting weirdly interviewed and they're so fucking awkward. Yeah, it's exactly, it's like a recruitment video, and their selling point is
one of the crew is like a documentarian or something. He's always like, and you want to tell us what we're doing here? Like, and somebody's like, oh, sure, right now we're like working on this.
And it's like, they're a bunch of just yokels. They're super dumbass, and the leader is like just a complete fucking tool, but these guys play them so well. So, like, it's very
believable. Absolutely. It's just this, like, what, the one guy that was sort of like the dumb one, I guess, his name was like Jim or something. I can't remember, but I loved him. I was like, you can barely see this guy, but he is great.
Oh my god. Yeah, no, it's just the humor on this is, like, outstanding, because it's well placed, and it's also, I mean, it's just the level of cheese is there, but, like, just because of who these characters are, it just adds to it. So they are trying to bomb a federal building with a bioweapon, and their bioweapon is, they don't say vampire, I don't think, explicitly.
At the end,
I think that, okay, at the end they do.
They do at the end, because, yeah.
So like, there's this continuous thing where, like, there's a room with, like, a bunch of crosses and garlic out front, because you're led to believe it's a vampire all the time. They name it towards the end. And they just continuously shoot the same dude in the fucking head when an alarm goes off. So the first time it happens,
he was a vampire. I noticed the crosses. I didn't notice the garlic.
Yeah, so there's like crosses and garlic and stuff like that.
Oh, I was very into the mystery of this. I'm like, this alarm keeps coming off and then this guy's alive again and they keep shooting him in the face. Like, I found that actually kind of compelling, being like, what is going on?
It's also just like, I also love their attitude while they're doing it, because it's just like, all right, time to make the donuts. And they just walk in and just blow this dude's fucking head off and then just close it and just start kind of doing their thing. So they scope out this place. They have a cop shows up and gives them a bunch of guns and shit like that, which they also stop the camera and then reset it up. So like, it's like a stupid award ceremony. Like, he shakes the cop's hand on camera and the guy's like, I don't want to be videotaped. Like, he's like, his hat's all down and shit like that. Also, that cop is also one of the SWAT members in the tie-in story end, actually. Yes, he's the guy who gets tied to the chair at the end.
At the end?
Yeah.
Good.
So, I honestly, like, this one is so fucking good. I mean, obviously the vampire kills towards the end. Okay, so basically they are going to bomb this place. They decide, hey, fucking, like, oh, they test it out. So they put put vampire blood on a rabbit and they wait till sunrise. And this guy gets up because he thinks, like, it didn't work. So he stands above the bunker and this thing blows his ass 15 feet back. It's like, he looks like a goddamn, like, Warner Brothers cartoon. His hair's all flooded up. He's, like, shooting out fucking dust out of his face. So they have their weapon, and they all decide to get fucking wasted. And two of these dumbasses decide to fuck with this vampire. Mm-hmm. And havoc ensues, gets loose, slaughtering everything. But what's even funnier is that these guys are so incompetent and idiotic is that there's a dude on a Gatling gun that literally fires into the building and murders half of the militia while doing it, and then has to get shot in the back of the head because the guy goes
militia
like,
that's
shit.
Outside the building, not inside the building. He just can't control the gun, so he's like, whoa,
everywhere.
Yeah. You just go, oh god, and just fucking bullets flying everywhere. So you get to see this thing, and it's not a traditional vampire in the sense, like, it has like a it has like a vertical mouth. It almost looks like a mixture of like a Venus, like a fleshy,
like,
Venus flytrap.
The vampires,
like,
in Blade 2 that feed on vampires.
Yeah, except like it goes from like the fucking top of his nose to like his center of his chest. And it like kind of melts people too. So I also really like the fact that this vampire, I don't know if it's a comeuppance or whatever, fucking drags this dude into the pen where he'd been continuously getting his head shot. And then this guy murks himself at the end of it and just blows everybody up because, oh yeah, the second their blood or this thing hits sunlight, it explodes like C4. So like the bunny explodes and has like a huge ditch. So this guy basically murders himself to kill this militia. See him open the door and just fucking gone. It was a lot of fun. I think, like, it was specifically too, because
nuke out of nowhere,
realistically,
right?
Nuke out of nowhere. It was another nuke out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. It is kind of funny though, because like, you really don't see much of the vampire. Like, this is mostly a comedy driven segment. And then like the end of it, everybody just fucking dies.
Well, I think, yeah, it was like, there was the funny characters, especially compared to what we've been seeing, or, you know, it's only so funny. It's a militia trying to blow up government buildings. For me, watching it, there was also that mystery of just like this side thing where they keep going and killing this guy every time the alarm goes off. I'm like, right, what, like, is going on with this?
What's going on with this guy?
So I was like intrigued with that bit, like, you know. I definitely wanted to know what was going on.
Especially when they murder him for the second time, because you go like, fuck, is that the same dude? And mm-hmm. you're like, oh, fuck. Okay, well, this is weird. This is super bizarre.
Yeah.
And obviously the tie around kind of goes back into Holy Hell, and then it kind of just talks about how half the cops are actually in on the death cult and a bunch of other shit, and it ends
kind of
like... It's
not a
kinda
drug ring they're busting up. It's actually a death cult, and...
That sells, like, these fucked up VHS tapes like a drug, basically. So
why were all those people with their eyeballs out on the... I didn't get that.
Dude, it's so fucking metal that you watch these videos and you rip your own goddamn eyeballs out.
That's what it's supposed to be.
Yeah, man.
This fucking movie is...
That makes sense.
This movie is so good that, like, like your eyes are unworthy to watch anything else after that.
It's over. I'm done.
It's over. I don't need to see it. Yeah, right. Done.
Oh, before I forget, because I don't think I mentioned them, The Empty Wake was directed by Simon Barrett, and then Terror was done by Ryan Prowse. I will give credit, though, Chloe Okuno, who did Storm Drain, this is her, if I'm not mistaken, what I was able to research from her, she's only done little short films. Like, this is the first time she's been in an actual major motion picture and fucking knocked it out of the park. Like, that was such a fun segment to watch.
Fun, campy... It almost in the same way Malignant was, like, just like a throwback to like the best 80s horror.
Okay.
Oh, absolutely. It's like this VHS 94 is the goriest, I would say, out of the segments, but the most justified being gory. Like, this makes me feel like I just bought, like, this is definitely era centric in the fact that, like, this feels like a 90s movie. Like, this feels like just a gore fest that you would pick up at Blockbuster and just gavone on. So I would say shy of the tie around story. I mean, this was fucking great. This was so much fucking fun to watch.
A lot of fun.
I would say, all said and done, I would give this, I'm going to lob off about 3.5 out of 5.
Okay.
3.5 out of 5. It's not good. I mean, for a fourth installment, that's pretty goddamn good. Yeah. I need to throw it. Oh yeah. What was that? Throw it into the ground.
Yeah,
I'm gonna throw 3.5 fingers in the grave on that one. Like, it was and 5 fingers for continuity.
Sam, do you have a rating for it?
I'm just gonna go to regular ratings. I'm gonna go to our fingers in the grave rating system, and I'll give it a 3 as well. It's I'm more on a 2.5 than a 3.5 side.
Okay,
but
okay. So you round it up. I mean, I appreciate that.
Yeah, I'll go with 3. 3 fingers in the grave.
3 in the grave, 3.5 in the grave. I think those are two good scores for this one. So ultimately, would you recommend people to check it out?
Oh, at least once.
Horror fans, yes. Regular people who kind of like horror or like watch.
Regulars?
No. Yeah. No.
Yeah. Yeah, this is a really fun.
It's not your Blockbuster appealing to everybody type of horror movie.
Sure.
Oh, absolutely. No, I completely agree. Like, this is a really fun one for you and a few friends just to get together and just watch a splatterfest. Like, this is horror brain candy at its finest. Like, the entire series, there are some good jump scares. This is specifically like almost like a party movie. Like, this is having a bunch of friends over and having a good time and watching just some just ridiculous gore.
This would have been fun too if we could have all watched it together, for sure.
No, the VHS series really makes me think of when we all lived together. Like, this would be the caliber of movies that we would watch. And I think these are great hangout movies. Like, this has like, we're not committed by any standpoint. And honestly, I think that's I might do a huger diver deep into like my love of anthology horror movies. But I think that's my favorite part about anthology horror movies, is that, like, even if one of them is a little weak, there's the eclectic versions and how anthology horror movies are made, is that, like, if one doesn't work for you, the other four are going to.
Sure.
Like, it's just, it kind of has that hit or miss. It's almost, it's like R-rated television, basically, where it's just like you have these little snippets and you're like, man, this is really good. And hopefully sometimes the overarching story kind of ties it together. Even with this, it was lackluster, but the whole movie still was fucking great to watch.
Fantastic. There you have it, everyone. Another one of Ross's movie roundup reviews on the Rodeo Ranch. So thank you for that. And we'll figure it out.
We'll get
there. So thank you once again. After that, we're going to go for a quick little break. And welcome back to Treadle the Pod. The podcast that doesn't do this. I don't know why I keep wanting to do that. So,
God, man, dude, hey, you're feeling the room. Just go for it.
Yeah,
it's the podcast he listens to all the time. He's stuck in his head.
Yeah, I got to get out of it. Yeah. I got to get out of my own head. But real quick, we're going to go into Sam's segment next. But before we do that, we're going to do this week's metal drop, or as Sam would like to soon see, the music moment.
Music moments.
This week we are featuring the band CU Space Cowboy. Oh.
That drop is from the song Disdain coupled with a wide smile off the album The Correlation Between Entrance and Exit Wounds. So real wordy titles, but that's fun. Wow. See, you Space Cowboy are hardcore punk, or they also call themselves a sasscore band coming out of San Diego, California. Yeah. Apparently it's a thing. Looked into it a little bit.
Sasquatchcore?
More not quite. It's a
branch offshoot of like screamo type stuff. So their name is taken from a phrase at the end of title cards for the anime Cowboy Bebop, if you're familiar with that.
I am.
And they're also heavily involved in creating a dialogue with fans regarding LGBTQ representation. So I would definitely check them out. They're fun. I've listened to two of their albums now a few times over, and it reminds me of something that I would have listened to also when I was a lot younger as well. Mm-hmm.
So, like 20 years ago.
Yeah, 100%. So I can see Sam and us balling out to this, and geez, I couldn't remember the name, what your old car was, but
Chevy Lumina.
Yeah, check that stuff out. Check out his car if you want to, but if you have any suggestions as well, go ahead and follow us on Twitter and Instagram and shout out what you would like to be the next metal drop or music moment. And from that point, we are going to go ahead and jump straight over to Sam with this week's history lesson.
Well, hello, boys.
Hello.
How are we doing? Are we ready to talk about...
Are you ready for class?
Do you guys have your pencils and books?
All right. Jedediah Strong Smith. That's right.
What's the deal with this guy?
His middle name is Strong.
I saw that.
He's a famous fur trapper, mountain man, explorer. He was part of Ashley's 100, which it's come up with Jim Bridger and Hugh Glass with the Rocky Mountain Fur Company.
Sure.
So he was the first American to make it to California, and he was the first American to explore much of the West, like a whole lot of just places I could tell you that wouldn't really mean anything, and I'd just be listing places, so we're not going to get into that. It's pretty boring.
We're not just going to start naming off places from the list. Exactly. Sorry for all our big list heads out there. Skip that.
If you're interested, you know, you can Google it.
That's for the Patreon.
Yeah.
The Patreon just has a link to Google.
Yeah, a link to Google, Wikipedia list of places that he was the first American to explore. And I said he was the first American because, of course, he did most of this exploring using Native American guides that already knew the territory. So it wasn't like hard.
It wasn't like completely unknown.
It's not like people discovered a new pass. Exactly. He was just pointed out a new pass that he then told other Americans about.
Right.
Which really is what all the explorers did. So, old Jed had many interesting tales of explorations from his journey across the western United States. But for now, we are going to focus on one incident. As we just mentioned, he was part of the Rocky Mountain Fur Company, which you would remember from prior episodes. And the one we just did about Hugh Glass, you might remember that at one point the group, the Rocky Mountain Fur Company, split into two parties. One was Hugh and his group, headed up to the mouth of the Yellowstone River. And the other one was Jedediah Smith and his company. And they were going up the White River to the Black Hills of South Dakota. This is where we meet Jed and his party for our little ditty tonight.
All right.
At this time where we come into contact with him, they had just split up. Hugh Glass was probably crawling and foraging his... trapping his way back to the fort where he would restock to go get his vengeance.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And one day, Jed and his company were clearing their way through thick brush when suddenly Jedediah Smith was attacked by a grizzly bear.
I was hoping you were going to cover this. This is going to be the bear cat. I love it.
Perfect.
we're going to do animal maulings, specifically grizzly bear if we can. I just thought this was hilarious. This is an interesting guy who there's a lot of interesting stuff you could read, but the fact that he was also attacked by a bear right after Hugh Glass was just is like, yeah, stunning.
In the same time frame. I mean, I guess it's probably pretty common for the time as well.
Yeah, I guess you're running into as mountain men, I guess.
Do you think the bears knew each other?
Maybe.
They're was like, it the same bear?
I got another one.
The same bear. It was the same goddamn bear.
This is afterwards, maybe. And Glasses was dead. So unfortunately, unless they only thought it was dead.
Legend. Yeah. The legend. Who knows what the legend was true or not?
Exactly. So with a single swipe, the bear tore through his side, slamming him to the ground, tearing open his flesh and breaking his ribs. The bear then bit down on Jed's head and flopped his body around like a rag doll before dropping Jed to the ground and disappearing back into the tall brush. His crew rushed to his side to assess the damage. It was not good.
Oh, shit.
I don't think he's looking too good.
Yeah, exactly. Like, just bad, you guys. One of the men who was there, Jim Kleiman, said, "The grizzly did not hesitate a moment, but sprang on the captain, taking him by the head first, pitching sprawling on the earth, breaking several of his ribs and cutting his head badly. The bear had taken nearly all his head in his capacious mouth, close to his left eye on one side and close to the right ear on the other, and laid the skull bare to near the crown of the head. One of his ears was torn from his head to the outer rim."
So he's doing all right.
Yeah, they were correct in being like, this isn't good. Problem.
They're just chug-a-lugging.
And you would think Jed would be screaming and cursing and, well, I guess actually he was very religious, so he probably wouldn't have been cursing. You would have thought he would have been very upset, but he was not totally calm. Jim Kleiman, who just gave us that great quote about him being mauled by the bear, he asked him to sew his scalp back on.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, because he's probably in shock. So they were like, yeah. Well, my half my face peeled off.
Good time to do it.
Could you? Yeah, but what better time than now?
There would have been no pain management. Yeah, otherwise, like if they waited. So definitely the best time. So he cuts away some bloody clumps of hair and gets to work. Here's another quote from Kleiman. "I put my needle sticking it through and through. Over and over, laying the lacerated parts together as nice I could with my hands."
At least he tried.
Yeah, and he's just a guy, you know, he's just a trapper, whatever his job was on this.
Right.
So he's just working with what he's got.
Yeah.
He sewed the scalp on the best he could. Apparently, Jim did not think he'd be able to sew Jedediah's ear back on, but Jed insisted that he tried. He was like, just do it, just, man.
Just try. Just come on,
if
man.
You don't do it, it's definitely it. Gone. So better try it and not have it.
What's the worst
thing
that's happened? It's just going to fall off later.
Yeah.
Did he do it upside down?
Oh, that would have been good. Or backwards.
Backwards.
Well,
I need to hear if someone's coming up from behind me.
He's like, but could you actually do it backwards? So maybe I could prevent this from happening in the future. Now, as far as I know, he was able to actually successfully reattach it.
Wow.
And so, unlike with Hugh Glass, they did not abandon Jed.
they actually, you know, helped him.
Wow. Yeah. And after about 10 days Plot of twist. Recovery, he just kept on trucking. They kept on doing what they were doing because 10 days rest is all you really need.
They went back to what they were
really
doing.
Yeah. Jed was like, all right, man, let's keep going. For the rest of his life, Jedediah would wear his hair long on one side to cover his hideous scars that he had along his face and his messed up ear.
He
was the first emo.
Yeah, he was really into Fall Out Boy and My Chemical Romance.
Swoop. His hair at the back was also like shotgun blasted backwards.
Nice.
And that was it.
I think I had that haircut.
after the attack, it was after the attack that he did most of his most famous exploring that made him known, including quote unquote discovering the Southern Pass through the Sierra Nevadas to California, which allowed for passage to California. This is what allowed Americans to go settle there, essentially. this will not be the route that the Donner Party uses when they decide to make their way to California. But we will get to that whenever I give you my next segment. And that wraps up all I have to say about this guy. Just a quick, short, little bear attack.
Well, I think an interesting thing I noticed about him, too, is that, like, his only portrait, there's, like, only one picture of him, and it was drawn from memory after he died.
Really? I gotta
Google this. Like, and it's with his, you know, emo haircut and all that stuff, too. And that, yeah, he was also a very, like, Christian man, and that he didn't like to, he wouldn't curse. And it was...
He bathed a lot and shaved, which was, like, unheard of for mountain men.
Oh, my God, he bathes?
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. A nice little, quick little, trip to the history classroom with Sam. Once Sam's little corner with Sam, whatever we're calling it, we just took you there, and we're happy it came along. So we'll go take another quick little break, and then we're going to jump right back into my time to do a thing. So see you there.
Yeah.
Welcome back to Chuddle the Pod. And as we mentioned right before the break, it is my turn to go. So we're going to kick right into it, and I'm going to have you, what do I say, like, close your eyes and open your mind as we dive into the creepy files.
Ooh, I like that.
So this week's story, we're going to...
He says it every time.
Well, I'm glad he likes it. This week's story is going to take us to Clifton, Virginia, around Fairfax County. The year is 1949. It's a cold February in Clifton, Virginia, when the local papers report of a gruesome slaying of a mother and her 8-year-old baby girl.
Brutal.
The two were found in a shallow grave after disappearing during a car ride with the husband. Police soon found the victims in a shallow grave. The woman had been beaten and shot. The baby girl buried alive. The husband and father was eventually arrested, convicted, and sent to a mental institution.
Sounds
so
bad.
Pretty brutal.
Awful, yeah.
Pretty lighthearted start.
Right. Yeah. I'm just gonna, you know, take a nice little dandy stroll.
I think there's a Disney movie that starts off like this.
I think it's Bambi.
It's Pixar.
Pixar
makes sense. So then, years later, rumors begin to spread all around town of an escaped mental patient that haunts a nearby railroad overpass. He's said to live nearby, killing... What's that?
Is he an escaped mental patient or a ghost?
Well, like, people can haunt an area.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I technically be loitering, but I'd be, like, haunting, too.
Yeah. Okay, so years later, rumors begin to spread of an escaped mental patient that loiters around a nearby railroad overpass.
Honestly, I like maybe we should just do the haunting.
So it's gonna kind of it'll fit the theme, okay? So he's loitering around, he's hanging out. He is said to live nearby, killing and eating rabbits while wearing their skins and leaving their mutated bodies hanging in the trees. Other legends state that if you approach the overpass at midnight and speak the man's name 3 times, he will appear and slash your throat. So why would you do that? I don't know. But leaving your body
cousin
dangling from the bridge, people will go up and say, "Bunny man, bunny man, bunny man." I couldn't do it.
Bunny man?
This is the story of the bunny man.
Bunny man? Is it like, is it like Edward Bunny Man, or is it just Bunny Man?
This is just the bunny man.
Edward Bunny Hands.
Just the bunny man. Edward Bunny Hands.
And these are legends that have stories and things that popped up all about this character that
suicide
loiters
by bunny
around
man
this area. So we're going to jump ahead to October 19th, 1970. This is when U.S. Air Force Academy cadet Robert Bennett and his fiancée were visiting nearby relatives in the nearby county. So around midnight, while returning from a football game, they reportedly parked their car in a field on the nearby road to visit an uncle who lived across the street from where the car was parked. They were obviously pulling over to do some necking. Yeah. So, as they sat in the front seat with the motor running, they noticed something moving outside the rear window. Moments later, the front passenger window was smashed, and there was a white-clad figure standing near the broken window. Bennett turned the car around while the man screamed at them about trespassing, including, "You're on private property and I have your tag number." As they drove down the road, the couple discovered a hatchet on the car floor. So there's like all this like really weird shit, but then also like that quote.
Yeah, so, it's like...
So wait, so you had a geriatric guy beating off outside of a car while these two kids are necking. And then he tries hatcheting them and then tells them that they're on private property.
Well, the latter half of your story was true. I never spoke about an old man beating off.
I'm just saying, there's two kids necking in a car. There's got to be some guy furiously masturbating outside of it. I mean, it's Florida, right? No, is this in Florida? No, sorry, this is Virginia. I'm sorry. Everyone in Virginia, I apologize. I just automatically picture this being in Florida and someone's got to have their pants off, Donald Ducking it.
Yeah, of course. No, not Florida, Virginia. Okay, so yeah, hatchet on the floor in the middle of Virginia. So yeah,
yeah. So in this property, that like you're on my property and I have your tags thing also. That
right. So he shuts that as well, and it's like the road
doesn't
that they're
sound
on.
Like a bunny, any bunny man I know.
Well, when the police requested a description of the man, this is when Bennett insisted he was wearing a white suit with long bunny ears. However, Bennett's fiance contested that their assailant did not have bunny ears on his head, but was wearing some other sort of something on his head. But she's like, it was not bunny ears.
It was a top hat.
It could have been. It could have been like, there's a, I mean, of the time, it's the 70s at this point. Were we doing wacky hats in the 70s?
Head fashion could be happening.
Here's a funny part of the story. It says they both remembered seeing his face clearly, but in the darkness, they could not determine, like, his race. So they're like, we saw it very clearly, but we could also not see it very clearly. So,
like, yeah, I saw him, absolutely. Was he white or black? Ooh.
Right. So there's nothing to that. Like, I guess they may have been distracted by the bunny outfit. The police returned the hatchet to Bennett after the examination. So they're like, do you want this?
All right, well, then, we don't want this. Do you want this?
Yeah, we don't want this. Do you want to have this almost murder weapon?
Here you go. So there was a second reporting sighting that occurred on the evening, October 29th, 1970. So not like, what, 10 days later, when a construction security guard, Paul Phillips, approached a man standing on the porch of an unfinished home in Kings Park West on the same road where the our first attack took place. Phillips said the man was wearing a gray, black, and white bunny costume and was about 20 years old, 5'8", and weighed about 175 pounds. The man began chopping at the porch post with a long-handled axe, saying, "You are trespassing." I don't know what this was. "You are trespassing. If you come any closer, I'll chop off your head."
Ooh, that was good. That was really good. That needs to be.
It's completely different than the first Bunny Man, but who knows? The Bunny Man's a legend. We don't know what his voice sounds like.
But this is 20-year-old Bunny Man now, and the first report was like an older guy. So no, it makes sense.
Well, they never actually said how old the guy was. You still have the old creep in the bushes stuck in your head, but that wasn't stated. Oh. Yeah. We have reports. Yeah,
I made that up. Okay.
But I mean, it's 49 and 70 and he was a husband with an 8-year-old daughter. Right.
Well, these are just all kind of like parts to the legend or whatever that this is here. So
maybe it's like a bunny cult.
It could be a bunny cult. So he's once again warning someone about trespassing, which is a very weird thing for a 20-year-old to do, in my opinion. I don't see a lot of people like 20-year-olds doing that, but maybe it's a whole different world when you're wearing a bunny costume in the middle of, you know, nowhere, Virginia. The Fairfax County Police opened investigations into both incidents, but both were eventually closed for lack of evidence. In the weeks following the incidents, more than 50 people contacted the police claiming to have seen the Bunny Man. Several newspapers, including the Washington Post, reported that the Bunny Man had eaten a man's runaway cat. The Post articles that mentioned this incident were And it, there's like a list of a whole bunch of different kind of from when it when the sightings first happened in October. For a few months afterwards, people were talking about it because, you know, it was interesting enough to talk about. But in 1973, Bunny Man Fever. It was hot in Virginia with Bunny Man Heva. In 1973, Patricia Johnson, a student at the University of Maryland, submitted a research paper that chronicled precisely 54 variations of those two incidences we just talked about.
Whoa.
So, yeah. So these are just stories being told over and over again, and it's constantly changing what actually happened.
Mm-hmm. Tweaked.
The story of the Bunny Man is half urban legend mixed with real stories. So a Fairfax County Public Library historian by the name of Brian Conley did like a lot of research into this because he worked in that area. So he had a lot of people coming in being like, so what's true about the Bunny Man? What's fake? And nobody really knew anything. So he's like, I'm going to try to find out. Exactly. As your local librarian, I'll find out for you. Go to your local libraries, people.
This dude fucking takes his job really seriously.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I mean, he was probably getting questions. He was getting a lot of questions about it. It was kind of becoming a big thing in the area. Okay, so yeah, our local librarian, he's researched a lot into this. So that's where a lot of this comes from. So that story I told you.
Librarian?
Librarian? No, it's librarian.
Oh. Yeah. Well, his name's Brian, right?
Oh, no, but it's librarian. all of our jokes were just like it's over my head. I'm too in wrapped in Bunny Man thought right now.
You're too engorged in the Bunny Man.
So our librarian is researched the Bunny Man and come up with all this kind of history on it, which we just heard here. So it's a lot of mix between articles about weird things that have happened that might not necessarily have anything to do with the Bunny Man. But the two stories that I told in the 70s are kind of where the legend really springs from.
Okay.
It
springs from the property guy, not the guy who...
the property guy. Not the killer guy.
The guy who lived on... Yeah, that's weird.
Well, so the first story...
The loiterer.
So the husband and father who was convicted and sent to the mental institution, that's where that story ends. Then the legends pick up that this person escaped and lived loitered by a bridge and ate bunnies and did all that stuff.
Right.
That kind of evolved from that first story after the original Bunny Man stories happened in like the 70s. Trying to create a legend around this. This is a...
Also, it's a lot more menacing to think that he's wearing like dead rabbits on him from like what he's eaten versus like he went out and rented a bunny suit and then was just hanging out.
See, the original, like if this was a movie, the original would have been a guy in a bunny suit killing people. And then like the weird, like even grittier, harder remake that came out later would have been a guy in like bunnies that he captured. So we got both aspects of like the original and the revamp.
And the remake, yeah.
I can see like a really clean version too where it's like the white suit with like a head, white bunny head like a DJ would wear, and they get all the blood on them when they're...
Okay, yeah. Know. That's like an even more, like, that's updated to now standard. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah.
That's like Jason Goes to Space kind of, like, revamped character.
Nice and clean.
Nice and clean.
So the overpass, there's an overpass where a lot of this takes place. It's called Colchester Overpass. It was built in 1906, and... The road kind of leads right into it. So that's where a lot of the other legends come from. If you go over to the overpass, that's where you can say his name three times and it will appear and you can get killed and all that fun stuff. So because Eduardo of its association with the legend, the overpass is a popular destination for paranormal enthusiasts and curiosity seekers. So interest also really increases around Halloween. So at one point, the police have started having to like turn people away because of like 14-hour traffic checkpoints into the area. All this crazy stuff of just people kind of like flocking to that area around Halloween. But that is the story of the Bunny Man. It is an urban legend, probably say pretty strictly an urban legend. Some, little spots of truth to it. But any actual crazy Bunny Man that has killed anyone, I don't think there's evidence for it.
Okay.
That's because I know how to cover up.
Hey, he's a Bunny Man.
Edit that out.
Nice. So it's, edit that out. So it's basically like an urban legend Sunday with like a cherry of truth on top.
Yes. Or, nice. I don't know where the truth is. It's buried all in there somewhere. And it
that's
kind
the
of
beautiful thing about that. Urban legends.
Right. Yeah. Right. I mean, some of them probably strictly come from like a lot of nothing that really of like this had some like level of possibly a man in a weird bunny suit with a hatchet doing weird things.
Yeah.
As opposed to, you know, like, I don't know, where urban legend of like somebody flashing their high beams at you. Right. If that has any like basis in,
well, that's real. That's gangs in LA.
Well, the like the
I wasn't being serious because that's what the version of the urban legend I knew was that gang members would go out into the like boondocks and without their headlights on, and if someone flashed their headlights, hey, turn your flashlights on, they'd follow that car and come kill them.
I always heard it was like some sort of like initiation into something. I don't know. Yeah, everyone has their own versions of that type of thing. And I think that's a widespread urban legend that has like, so many different kind of
versions
to it, mm-hmm. as opposed to, this one's a little bit more singular. So
that's a fun part about urban legends. It's almost like tailored to the area that you live in.
Mm-hmm.
It makes it a little more personal and creepier.
Mm-hmm. So there we go. That's our segment for our creepy files this week. We're going to go and do a couple, I don't know, would you rather? We're going to do a couple of those to end out our podcast for the night. So I have a couple more that I've searched around the depths of Reddit and found some really weird things. And we're going to go ahead and ask those right now. So this one's a little bit, has another multiple choice question to it, but would you rather change one thing about yourself physically, be 30% happier in life mentally, breathe underwater, say one thing to your younger self that's not money related, so like no stock advice or any of that, have the ability to fly, but you have huge wings now, or get a free $10,000 every year?
Is there any hang-ups to breathing underwater? Like with flying?
None listed.
I think I'd go with a breathing under 30% happier seems like good, but like at what cost? Are there any catches for that? Like, but 30% dumber.
Yeah, no, there's not really any any caveats
except for the flying one.
Yeah,
there's the flying is you have huge wings, but I mean that could be kind of cool. But I think I don't know. I would probably choose just because I want. I would probably choose the money.
10K.
10K. It's not that much, but it's like, you know, just to have
that's
that
a
extra
year, right?
Every year, you get $10,000.
I feel like I could make 10 grand off of breathing underwater somehow.
I mean, I guess, yeah, if you, I mean, well, I'm surprised you didn't choose the ability to fly, because that's the best way for you to, like, get out of a sticky situation real quick.
I'd have to not be indoors.
Big wings, though.
I can't drown this way. And
you're not always around water. What if you're just like hanging out in Montana? What good is?
Well, maybe I'll stick to the rivers and the lakes.
Maybe you
can
do bets in swimming pools.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you are in Florida, so
and
I guess
the,
that makes sense.
Most of the earth is water. Like,
70%. Some would say, right? 70.
Yeah, I think that's right. Like that. For me, it's either the breathing underwater or the 30% happier, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'd go breathing underwater. Now,
do you just feel 30% happier, or just like is your life 30% better?
Perspective change.
Yeah.
it's introspective, not like miraculously 30% more of your life is better.
Right. Yeah, it just kind of you think that it is.
So it's just free antidepressants. Okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you'll just find something else to be unhappy about otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Very true.
Okay, I got two more for you. They come from the same person on Reddit. And these ones are a little ridiculous. And then I think we're going to end with this. And I... Would you rather have sex once with your crush or spend time with your family and friends all the time?
What?
I was scrolling through. I'm like, what are you trying to ask me? So the question is,
this is
rather
about like a 13-year-old,
right?
There's two options. Say, like, this is
have sex once with your crush, or spend time with your family and friends. What would you rather do?
Oh man!
And then follow up question from him.
Okay.
Do you only date virgins?
What?
What? The choices are, I would only date a virgin, I would date a non-virgin, and then I wouldn't date.
Yeah, this is so like, yes,
it's 100% written by 13. Like an 11-year-old. Like, yeah.
Do you know who wrote that? A virgin wrote that.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I would say their name, but I don't want to call them out on Twitter. But if you go out there, you can easily find this.
So yeah, I think I'm just gonna hang out with my friends and family. And
I'm assuming you can only do one or the other, right? Like if I choose to have sex with my crush. I just found another one
that he posted. This guy's on a roll. Do you like ass? / grabbing ass. So here's what
that's like the prompt.
Okay, so
here's your choices. So do you like
asses and also grabbing asses?
So the first choice, I like ass, but not grabbing ass. I like ass and grabbing ass. I like neither, not attracted to women. I don't think grabbing ass has to be strictly woman related, but we'll just stick with I like neither.
To something with a butt, but
he's missing the point. I mean, dude, that's the beauty of ass. Ass is universal.
Ass is universal, baby.
Yeah.
So here we go. I like ass, but not grabbing ass. I like ass and grabbing ass, or I like neither.
I'm going to have to go with B.
Yeah.
I think this is when we're a bunch of B boys here.
Absolutely. You have to, you can respect the butt.
Now, is this a poll? Can you answer it and see what the percentage people?
I mean, there's 48 votes. I guess I could. Why not? I'm gonna answer this and see if it gives me like.
I want to know what people say.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. I mean, I can answer these and I'll get you the results right here. So, with our ass grabbing, out of the 57 votes, 8 people said I like ass but not grabbing ass.
That's
4 people said I like neither, and 45 said I like ass and I like grabbing ass.
The 1 and 3 were all other children.
Right? So then we can go with our so would you rather have sex with your crush once or spend time with your friends and family? What are we putting for this one? So we got to find out the results. I'm going to put spend time with our friends and family.
Yeah, I'm assuming I could never do it if I choose to have sex with my crush once. I'd never.
You could only do it once, I guess, and then never again. So
right, but I mean,
yeah.
If I do that, I will never be able to spend time with my friends and family again.
Oh, yes. It doesn't say that. That's the parameters.
You lose all your friends and you lose all your friends and family.
Okay.
To have sex with your crush once.
Then I'll spend. Otherwise, I'd do both.
So this is a little bit more split. 53 votes are in for this one. 32 have sex with your crush. 21 spend time with your friends and family. I don't know if they thought about it as much as we did here.
or they just fucking hate their family.
You just let this. Right? We need to comment. Let this guy know to check this kid child know to come check out the episode.
Yeah. I don't. Oh.
How do you write that one down?
So that's our crazy dip into Would You Rather this week. As we would love for you to do, please send over your recommendations for something good for us to talk about here. That would be great. And as we go ahead and end this episode, I will say once again, thank you everyone who's listened so far. If you've never listened before, if you listen to all of them, we love you just as much. Please go ahead and rate us on any one of those things where you can rate us. Make it be known that we're a podcast that you like if you do like us.
Mm-hmm. Tell your friends.
Tell your friends. Tell your family if they're cool.
Tell your crush.
Yeah.
Tell your crush.
Yeah, I was going to say, either tell your crush once and then they dematerialize, or tell your friends and family, because you know what? They're more important.
And on that note, I believe that's a beautiful spot to end it right there. So go ahead and follow Ross at Chuddle the Ross. Go ahead and follow Sam at Chuddle the Sam. Go ahead and follow me at Chuddle the Brian with a Y, and follow all of us at Chuddle the Pod on Twitter and Instagram. And until next time, we'll be waiting.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, you beat me to it.
Chuddle, noun, a collective noun to describe a collection of douchebags. See also bag of douche.